Hello, I'm Peter Laws, and this is a sermon-only episode of the Creepy Cove Community Church podcast. If you'd like to hear the full church service, complete with strange comedy, special guests, and notices like you've never heard before, then all the shows are available for free. Just visit creepycove.com to find out more. But if you just want to hear a sermon, a time of quiet reflection, and a song, then this is for you. I'd be grateful if you could check out patreon.com/creepycove to find out how you can support the show and get lots of exclusive member benefits. But for now, I'll shut up. Here's your sermon. Thanks.
Mr. Peter Laws. Peter, could you please hop, skip, and jump to the stage? Well, so, you know, that was a figure of speech. You didn't have to do
Sorry.
It. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ouch. Come on.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Well, I want to start by saying that I was once chatting to a friend whose company sells its products all around the world. And she was sent on a course by her business that would teach her about the different cultures, because they argued that our culture can affect the way that we do business with one another. And so she said she was taught specifically about the difference between countries like Britain and America when it comes to culture. Now, of course, these are massive stereotypes, and there are always exceptions to this, but I'm just telling you what she told me the course said. They said that on the whole, British people, stereotypically perhaps, often seem to be naturally self-deprecating, that we tend to, as a culture, try to play our strengths down, whereas this business conference was saying that American culture, by contrast, can often be a lot more comfortable with simply saying things how they are, because it's a bit more efficient to get straight to the point. And so, for example, if you're great at something, it makes sense to be honest about that with other people. And they gave an example of a manager who was working in America who had to call a consultant in England. And the American company, they needed some important advice. And so apparently the phone call went something like this. The American said, hi, I've heard that you're the leading expert in this field. To which the Englishman returned a typically English thing to say. And even though he really was the best in his field, he said, oh, I'm not so sure many people would say I'm the best. And the American just said, oh, sorry, I see. Well, we were told you were the best, but I guess we better find someone else then. Thank you so much. And then hung up. The irony, of course, is that he really was the best in his field, and yet he thought the most appropriate thing to do would be to put himself down. And by doing so, he missed out on a new opportunity. Now, being humble is a good thing, of course. You know, always like bursting into a room and marching around, claiming to be, I am the best person here. Just so you know, I am the best person. You know, that is going to lead to a desperately lonely life. But does that mean that therefore we should see ourselves as the worst person in the room? We see every social engagement or every situation as a kind of hierarchy of importance, and we put ourselves towards the bottom. When we mess up, we criticize ourselves harshly, and it's good to be able to critique ourselves. That's a healthy skill, of course, but we end up going so far that we end up compulsively and consistently beating ourselves up. In fact, I have met people who are so compulsively cruel to themselves that their default position is to self-criticize, but to a level which is like way more stricter than they would for other people. You know, I see some people willing to forgive others, for example, who mess up, but when they mess up themselves, they refuse to extend that forgiveness inwards. The irony, I think, is that many of these wonderful people, and maybe it's you who experience this too, are many of these people are sensitive, especially to the poison of constant criticism, in that they are the first to condemn bullying in the workplace or at school or online. And yet while they are ready to condemn the bullies out there, they remain bullies of themselves. It's not pleasant to think of it that way, I suppose, but I think it can be like that. Friends of mine who constantly say, I'm so stupid and I've never done anything right. Nobody likes me. I've got no talent. I'm ugly. If they heard those words said to another person, they'd be horrified and they would stand up and defend them perhaps and say, don't you say that to that person. And yet when they say those words to themselves, because so much of this self-bullying is internal, there isn't anyone to step in between and say, hey, stop doing that. That's not true what you're saying. Well, listen, I want to be that person tonight. The person who steps into your internal monologue and say, whoa, hang on a minute. Maybe you're listening to this talk tonight for a reason. Maybe you just need somebody, a friend, to grab that bully in your head and say, hey, back off. Leave my friend alone. And most of all, stop lying to them. Because these are lies, you know. Now, of course, resisting that urge to beat ourselves up is a lot easier said than done. Because some of us, let's be honest, it's become like a lifelong habit. And I want to explore a couple of reasons to start with. Two classic reasons why we tend to beat ourselves up. And the first reason is this. We were taught to do it. Some of us beat ourselves up because we have picked this up as a pattern from others. We've had criticism modeled to us from those around us. We've taken that on board and feel that that's the correct way to relate to ourselves. And you often find this, its genesis in childhood. When we are children, we are particularly vulnerable to negative comments, not only from other kids, but particularly from parents or teachers or siblings. And you have to remember that your brain like picks up stuff from the world, particularly in those formative years. And so if you have just got people saying to you when you're younger, you're stupid, you're dumb, why'd you always mess this up, that sort of thing. It's almost like those phrases get kind of psychologically tattooed on your brain. And so they become the natural stock phrases that you use to define your own reality. It doesn't have anything to do necessarily with what is real. It's more to do with what you were told was reality when you were younger. But it doesn't just happen when you were young. It can happen in later life. I've known people who grew up with a healthy family life and were very confident, and yet they ended up getting into a relationship with someone who relentlessly criticized them, perhaps when they were at their most vulnerable, and just started to tattoo that message onto their brain later in life. Or maybe it's someone who has made a mistake, maybe a significant mistake. Maybe you have. I've made plenty of those. And for some reason, we felt so bad about that mistake that that became to define our view of ourselves. Some people kind of tattoo this message on their own brains when they are out of work for a while, or they face, you know, unemployment or retirement, or particularly parents who look after children for many years and perhaps they've left a rewarding job to do it and they don't feel that, you know, looking after children is important enough or doesn't qualify as proper work, even though it's really rock hard. and it takes a great deal of skill and art to do it. But what can happen is when a parent can end up saying, well, it's time for me to go back to a kind of more standard job, let's say, when my children go to school. It's amazing how much our confidence can be affected by feeling I haven't been out in the real world for a while, and I'm going to be rubbish, I'm going to fail this. I had this same feeling when I took the lion's share of looking after our kids while my wife worked. And doing that for long enough was a blessing, but it did affect my confidence too. So we can be taught to be not sure of ourselves, but also it can lead to beating ourselves up and saying, no, we're rubbish, we're going to mess this up. And that is not easy to unteach. It's not easy to remove those tattoos, but tattoos can be removed. It can take a long time, maybe even a lifetime to do it, but don't believe the message. And perhaps again, something from when you were younger to say, you're not capable of dealing with this. Actually, you are. You are more capable than you might think. So we might have been taught to beat ourselves up. But there's another reason why we can beat ourselves up, and that's because we may be perfectionists, that we constantly hold ourselves, not just to a high standard, which is nothing wrong with that, but to an impossible standard. And again, this way of thinking, this striving for perfectionism can be part of our upbringing, our experiences, particularly if we have really demanding parents who, you know, we do really well on like 10 tests at school. We like knock it out of the park. And then one of them, we're like 1 point off a perfect score. And the parent's like, why did you mess that one up? And you're like, oh man, you didn't notice how well I did with the other stuff. So that strive for perfectionism can come at us from one place or another. But it means that the achievements that we make are often irrelevant because we feel the achievement should have been perfection. Now, again, there's nothing wrong with wanting to do a good job. And having a perfectionist streak can actually lead to great successes in some ways. But the thing about perfectionism is that you think your goal is wanting to do the best you possibly can. But actually, the motivation isn't always as noble as that sounds. Actually, it's often not about wanting to achieve success. It's often about wanting to avoid failure at all costs. That's what perfectionism can be like. And that, I'm afraid, is incredibly unrealistic. And it's undesirable, too. It's actually important that we fail in life. Have you ever heard of that phrase, falling upwards or failing upwards? Our mistakes can lead to better things that were not thought possible before. You always hear these stories of inventors or people who are inventing the light bulb. You know, it goes wrong and wrong and wrong, but every failure is a step towards getting a breakthrough. But it's understandable. You know, we strive to do everything perfectly because we want to avoid pain. We want to avoid the sting of criticism or judgment from others, particularly if it's this creepy echo of criticism from the past that will open up old wounds. And sadly, we end up laying judgment on ourselves with these impossible standards. We self-bully and we latch onto the tiniest of mistakes. We ignore compliments as irrelevant because we even start to tell ourselves a story that whenever someone says you did well, we doubt it. And we think even, it's almost like paranoia. We think, you don't really mean that. You're lying to me to make me feel better. Listen, sometimes, right, you might not believe what I'm saying now, but sometimes when someone compliments you, they genuinely mean it. They actually mean it. But they are often using a different standard to you. And so they're quite happy with what you've done. Whereas you might struggle with it. Let me give you an example. It reminds me of a time when I used to be in bands when I was younger and at university. And after university, I was in a band. We toured for a while in UK and in Germany. And I always remember how sometimes after a gig, I would notice how the band would assess the performance and contrast that with how the crowd assessed the performance. And there's one night in particular, which is pretty cool evening, where it turned out that just before we started the gig, somebody told us that, guess who's in the crowd? One of the sons of one of the members of Pink Floyd are in the crowd. And we all look at each other going, holy crap. Right? Oh, all right, man, it suddenly feel like the expectation level is higher. And after that performance, I remember we were talking to each other like, so, oh, I can't believe I missed a note on that solo. Oh man, I did the wrong fill in on those drums. And we're kind of assessing it as a crappy performance. But if any of you have been involved in music before, you will realize, especially if you're out on a night in a club or something and you're playing and everyone's having a drink and just having a good time, people in the crowd often have zero idea that a note was missed or a fill-in was slightly wrong. They're just having a great time. And so they're not lying when they come to you and say, that was awesome. It's just they don't have this like obsessive laser focus on the tiniest of details. You see, perfectionism can sound noble and it can be a cool trait at times, but if you allow it to sink in, it will lead you to impossible standard setting, which will lead to procrastination. It will lead to black and white thinking that will cripple you. You know, I can't be a middle of the road novelist. I have to be the greatest novelist of all or none at all. It will stop you from taking risks. It will lead you to energy sapping comparisons with other people, and that fuels low self-esteem. It just stops you being the person you want to be. And what's more, if we make failure a taboo in our lives, we might not tolerate it in other people too, which frankly makes us to be quite difficult to be around. It's not easy being a friend with someone who expects perfection in themselves, but especially if they expect it in you as well. That's kind of hard work. And so I know this isn't easy, but I just think it's a fact. If we allow ourselves to be taught how to do this, and sometimes often through no fault of our own or through perfectionism, it can end up us beating ourselves up habitually. And when those relentless messages start going into our brains of you're stupid, you're wrong, you're an idiot, you'll never do anything right, it can lead to, you know, anxiety and depression and a sense of kind of not being able to connect with who we want to be, who we hope to be, because we think we couldn't ever be that. And perhaps that's the biggest kind of tragedy of it all, is when we start to believe these things as true and we think, ah, well, it's just typical. This is who I am. And there's nothing that can be done about it. Well, if you find yourselves gripped with self-criticism or depression or anxiety, then firstly, can you just, my heart is rushing to you now and just giving you a sense of companionship and friendship, and to say, you are not alone in that. Many, many people experience that. There will be people listening to this and listening to the sound of my voice that will go, "Crikey, that's me," alongside you when you say, "Wow, that's me." So you're not by yourself. And if it's leading to depression, anxiety and stuff, as ever, I would encourage you to get help with that. You know, talk to someone. There's no shame in that, getting medication or whatever is required. But for what it's worth, I thought I'd share, you know, just some steps that we might be able to make to be kinder to ourselves. And the essence of it is to say this: to tell yourself a new story. You see, beating ourselves up can be so ingrained, it becomes second nature to bully ourselves, that when we do it, we feel, this is right. This is natural. This is what we deserve. I am making a correct assessment of reality here. And when we do things well, we think, oof, that was a fluke, got away with that, but it's only a matter of time before I screw up again. When things go badly, however, we think, that's the real me. Well, what you need to realize is that labeling that you're doing, it's happening in your mind. It's happening in your brain. Another person can make the exact same mistake that you did, and they shrug it off and it doesn't bother them. But for you, the reason it hits a button is because it is telling an age-old story that maybe you have learned from being a child. Like, you know, you're worthless or stupid or will never amount to anything. To use a kind of horror film image, you know, like in horror films when you hear like the old like music box start up again, or like sort of a creepy old sort of wax cylinder disc, a record playing with old spooky like 1920s music. It's almost like that. When you do something and you start beating yourself up, it's like the creepy old story you learned when you were a kid starts again. But it doesn't mean that is an assessment of your reality. The key is, it's a story. It's a piece of music that you've learned off by heart. It doesn't mean that it's you. You see, your brain gets into patterns of thinking. So if you spent your whole life like assuming I'm crap, doesn't mean you're actually crap. But it does mean you have developed a pattern of assuming you're crap, right? That's very different from being crap. It's almost like, it's like that Pixar animation Inside Out. You're seeing that? It's cool. When the young girl has characters in her head, one for anger, one for joy, one for fear. They could make a sort of a horror film version of that, where there's like a bunch of nice characters and then scary murderous characters in a serial killer's head. No, I doubt Pixar would do that. Anyway, so moving on. But you know what? In Inside Out, they've got this cast of characters in the head. And for some of us, life has been so crappy to us and we've had awful criticism modeled to us for so long that the little guy who represents self-hate or anger towards ourselves or whatever, he's like really pumped. He's had so long to kind of press that button in you that he's been used so often in your life, maybe because of parents' criticisms or whatever, that he is the one who automatically hops up and presses the "you're crap" button in the face of life. And the confident character that lives in your head, the one that has the self-belief, that character is in there. You probably don't think that a character even exists, but she's there, or he's there, or however way you want to gender it. But in there, that character is there. It's just they haven't had much of a chance to get up. And so they slink into the background when the situations come. So you don't feel that press of the button, which you so desperately need, which is you are a valuable, cool person. I think one way we can start on the journey towards not beating ourselves up is to realize that these negative responses that go on in our head, they're beyond our control, right? They're not a sign of you being stupid or weird. It's just, it's natural. They are a learned reflex. But the key is to see them as just that, just thoughts that are a reflex. And don't judge yourself for feeling that way. And don't overthink the fact that you feel that way. The revolution comes is when you realize, wow, maybe my thoughts don't reflect what's real. It maybe is just a story I've been told and have come to believe. Well, guess what? It's possible to tell yourself a new story. It can be hard. Like I said earlier, it can take years, or it might even be the challenge of your life, the rest of your life. But an important first step is to recognize that the story you are telling yourself is a story that you have learned, and it doesn't have to define you. There's a cool verse in the Bible, Romans 12, verse 2, where it says, "Don't copy the behavior and the customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by, listen, changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect." There was a time when I read that verse for the first time and I thought, oh, it's one of those verses that Christians used to say, don't listen to heavy metal, don't watch horror movies, don't be worldly, don't think of the customs of the world. But actually, as I look at that verse in more depth, I think you could say it's saying, you know, the really negative things in our culture and even in our religious culture, this culture of blame that we live in, of beating others up and even ourselves. Don't fall for that. You know, let God transform you into a new person by the way you think. And if you're not into God, then, you know, just do it yourself. You'll try and work out a way of thinking about these things in a different way. You see, the world, even the religious world, can tell us a story that we're stupid and hideous sinners who God hates. Jesus comes along, blows that out of the water, in my opinion. He goes to the outcasts and the failures, the tax collectors, the sinners, the prostitutes, and says, I love these guys. I love eating with them, sharing my love with them, hanging out with them. I see potential in them where the world sees failure. So I wonder, he might be telling a different story, but what story are you telling yourself? When someone close to you has hurt you, for example, do you aim the anger at them or do you aim it at yourself? Because you think somehow you deserve that. Because your story says, oh, don't forget, you're always the villain of this piece. This might come naturally to you, but it's not true. You see, sometimes, you've got to hear me here, sometimes you are not in the wrong at all. Let me give you an example. It's quite a heartbreaking one, so fair warning if this is triggering, but I read about a man who hated himself because he'd been sexually abused when he was six. And for years, he assumed that he must have done something to encourage that situation. He was six. Six-year-olds don't even have a sex drive. But this poor man, this victim, had fallen into the trap of thinking that even that was his fault. When I hear those words, the word fault, it can't help bring to mind the gut-wrenching scene from Good Will Hunting when Robin Williams says to Matt Damon, they're talking about the abuse that Matt Damon had experienced from his dad. And at one point, Robin Williams, you know, looks at Damon and says, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. And at first, Matt Damon's like, yeah, I know it's not. Chill out. And Williams again says, it's not your fault. And he keeps saying this over and over again, so much that Damon starts getting angry. And he says, like, don't mess with me, right? You know, this, just stop saying this. I know it's not my fault. But even though Damon can say out loud it's not his fault, the story in his heart says it is and always was. And so Williams keeps going, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. And Damon pushes him away, gets angry, because it's like two epic stories clashing with one another. But Williams won't stop, and he says it over and over again until suddenly Damon, he just breaks down in tears and he sobs like a buildup of a lifetime of stress. And he realizes in that moment, wow, maybe it wasn't my fault. Do you get what I'm saying? How it takes effort and time to tell yourself a new story. It's like the passage that we had read to us earlier from Isaiah 43. It says, forget the former things, do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland. Sometimes it's not possible to forget the things of the past, by the way, so don't worry if you struggle with that. But the point is, we can end up dwelling on the past so much, all that's gone before, when actually we can miss the new thing that could bloom in our life. A spring in the wilderness, streams in what was a wasteland. And often all it takes for us is a shift in perception to see it. To see there's a new story out there which says you don't have to be the baddie. I want to encourage you guys tonight that if you keep beating yourself up, firstly, don't beat yourself up for beating yourself up. You could end up going like, oh, I'm typical. I'm one of those guys who does this. That's bad. No, you know, you're not dysfunctional for doing that. For some of you, the way people have spoken to you, the things you've experienced, the internal monologues you've had to sit through all this time. Oh, my word. Right. It's not surprising that you've been locked into this storyline, and it's not your fault. But I'm just going to say that other stories are available. Particularly with God on the scene, who has seen every heartache you've known, you know, and still loves you, I think. But of course, you might not be into that, and that's cool. You know, so you don't have to have the God element to see things in a new way. It's going to take a lot of work to use this new story, but I encourage you that you really are stronger than you think, and you are a better storyteller than you imagine. I mean, one of the reasons you beat yourself up so much is because you've become so adept at telling yourself the "you're crap" narrative. You're so skilled at that. Well, hang on. If you're skilled at that, who's to say you can't be skilled at changing it to a new tale? And if you wanted a practical way of potentially doing this, try this, right? Think about how you think about yourself in the next week, right? And write it down. But if you say, for example, if you think I'm ugly, well, not if you think I'm ugly, but if you think you're ugly, yeah, if your big issue is, I think Peter Laws is really ugly, and you want to write that down, well, write that down if you want. But if you think you're ugly as well, don't just write down I'm ugly. Write down I had the thought that I was ugly, or I had the thought that I'm a failure. Remind yourselves with your language that these are thoughts that you're having and simply may not be true at all. And then once that week's up, you know, you'll have a group of negative thoughts that you've had about yourself, just thoughts, but there they are nonetheless, and they can still freak you out and upset you, but there they are, thoughts. And then take that paper and burn it, or dip it in acid or something. Oh, actually, don't do that. It's a bit dangerous. But do something noticeable, ritualistic. Destroy it. And once you've done that after a week, for the next week, just write down positive stuff, like any positive achievement, and I mean no matter how small. So, for example, I thought I was a failure today, but I still went to work. I thought I was ugly today, but I still went outside. It's just gently tipping the scales. And if you don't want to write this down, you know, get your phone out or video yourself making a record of this stuff. A gentle note about your thought life that reminds you that thoughts are thoughts and don't always reflect the truth. Heck, when I went to see Superman for the first time, and I remember coming out from seeing Superman as a kid, and I was genuinely convinced I was able to fly, and there I was, quite embarrassing for my parents to see me running down the street and leaping in the air with my fist pointed to the clouds, thinking, it's gonna happen, it's gonna happen. It never did. And also, you know, don't be freaking out if the negative thoughts come back. They totally will. You know, if you're writing down positive things, you will totally have negative thoughts. That's really normal. This isn't a monster you can just kick out of the house. You know, it's a monster that you can learn to live with in a different way. So when those negative thoughts come, you know, write them down for a week, tell them as thoughts, and then put a positive spin on them the week later. Another thing to do, I think, which can be helpful, is to stop comparing yourself with other people. I realize that's really easier said than done. But just remember, the fact is there will always be someone richer than you, cleverer than you, more qualified than you, more traditionally attractive than you. And there will always be those who are poorer or not as clever or not as traditionally attractive as you. To see them as the guidepost of who you are is an impossible task, because you are not them. You've got to concentrate on being you. To use a cliche, be the best version of you. But it is true, isn't it? You know, you can't be anything else. And if comparison is getting to you, consider having a break from social media. Have a listen to the Creepy Cove service that explored that a few services ago. And if you can't do that, then at least stop being naive and thinking that everyone on that screen that you're looking at is having an amazing, wonderful life. You're thinking they're better off. You might have no idea of the shocking struggles they have. They might even long to wish they had your life. You just don't know. Another thing to do is learn to fail. So much so, in fact, that I would encourage you to find deliberate ways to fail. Try something new and get uncomfortable with the stumbling steps of trying. Maybe read biographies of famous, notable people and just make a note of how often they screw up. and how often that leads to development rather than an ending. And also, perhaps more important than anything else, is to be patient with yourself. Some of us who have been taught to bully ourselves so efficiently, we are like, well, it's almost like being a cult member. You know, someone who's been brainwashed into a certain way of thinking. And as your perception starts to change even a tiny bit, it's like you've been spirited away from this cult. But if you've seen any movies about cult members, it's not like they just wander away from a remote farmhouse and they're like, oh yeah, yesterday I was in a UFO doomsday cult, but you know, today I'm just going to join the badminton club instead, all sorted, completely got it out of my system. No, it takes a long time to deprogram. It's an ongoing work, but you can do it, especially with help, especially with friends around you. And I would say, you know, I find my spirituality to be a helpful resource in those sorts of times and on those journeys. But you might find another way of getting sustenance for the journey. And actually, to be fair, some of you out there will be feeling that the reason why I beat myself up is precisely because of religion. You know, we sing songs like Amazing Grace that talk about saving a wretch like me. There's a truth to that in the sense that the author of that song was a slave trader, treated people terribly, so he rightly owned that moral failure in his song and didn't hide it. But we can end up thinking, because of our experiences of church or religion, is that the appropriate response before God is to see ourselves as a worm or a loathsome spider, to quote the Puritan preacher Jonathan Edwards. And we're reminded, aren't we, of hundreds and images from movies where the truly holy and penitent monks are the ones that kneel before the cross and like whip themselves over and over because they feel like this is what God's into. It's like, what? Maybe they look at the cross and they think, you know, oh yeah, the reason why Jesus is on a cross is because God really loves violence and he loves to see people kind of punished for sin in a really shocking way. And he's kind of enjoying that rather than maybe, you know, Jesus is like battling with something or kind of demonstrating amazing sacrificial love on a shocking cross rather than a desirable one. It's like that Amazing Grace song, which, you know, the point of that song is to tell two stories. The first has some reality about it. The guy who wrote it says, I've been a horrible person. And some of us beat ourselves up because we really have done horrible things. We've done things that are wrong and hurtful. But the point of that song is that he was saying this story, this old story, wouldn't ultimately define him. Even he could be forgiven and have a new start. Even he had value through this thing called grace, which he didn't expect, didn't deserve, but he saw as a gift. So undeserved that he called it amazing. And whether you use God or spirituality as your resource, that's up to you. But I hope that you might reconsider beating yourself up so much, because ultimately, it maybe isn't you, you know. It's just the story you've told yourself. Speaking of stories, I'm going to tell you one final story to illustrate what I'm talking about. Once I was in school, right, and I was asked to perform a piece of music on the piano in front of everyone, in front of a school assembly. And every year group was in the school hall at the time, and I was crazy nervous about it. And I remember before the assembly started, I was pacing around the toilets, and I literally was shaking with fear. And I just thought, I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm going to fail. I'm going to mess it up. I'm going to look stupid. People are going to laugh at me. And I felt too proud to say to the teacher that I was too scared, so I needed a good excuse to get out of it. And so I stood in front of the mirror, I took a deep breath, and I took my fist, and I did something pretty stupid. I punched myself square in the face. Needless to say, it worked perfectly. My nose started to pour blood out of it. And I just went up to the teacher a few minutes before the assembly was about to start. And I said, I can't play, miss. I've suddenly had this massive nosebleed. And I got out of playing. But I noticed that she didn't ask me to play again. And it started to make me realize she probably knew. She probably knew I was in there punching myself in the face so I wouldn't do something like that. How stupid and daft that was. But understandable, I was scared. I wish I'd just done it. I wish I'd had more confidence and just felt the fear and did it anyway. You know, got out there and tried my best and realized if I'd failed, it would not be the end of the world. But I chose to beat myself up, literally. and I missed out on a little bit of adventure that day. And since then, I've tried to live my life saying yes to adventures in life, even though I think I might fail, and I often do. And I've got to be honest with you, I still say no to some things and I wish I would say yes. But I'm trying to step out in confidence in who I am. Who is, to be fair, the best me there ever was. But you know what I mean? It's true, isn't it? So much of doing that, so much of you doing that in your life, the first steps towards not beating yourself up is to learn to tell yourself a new story. Because there are new stories out there. And I hope that together, we can tell positive stories, not only over each other in Creepy Cove, but to ourselves as well. Thanks. Amen. Well, we're going to have a time of prayer and meditation now based on the horror movie Videodrome by David Cronenberg. If you're not into this sort of thing, do feel free to skip this. But if you're up for trying it, find a space where you can close your eyes. And just take a few breaths in and out. Be conscious of your body relaxing. Your face, perhaps you might not realize your jaws clenched or your muscles are tensed. Just gradually work your way through your body and let yourself chill. And now, in your mind's eye, I want you to imagine that you are in some freaky dungeon-style room. It's not very pleasant. The walls are covered in red clay. And as you go to move your hands, you realize that you are chained to this clay wall. The metal doesn't feel cold against your wrist, it feels warm. You can't free yourself, which means you can do nothing when the two figures walk in, wearing black hoods and weird black overalls. And they head up to you and raise what looks like a whip. Oof. And as you are being struck, you feel the pain of that. They start to take their masks off. And the first one, you can see someone, picture them. Some person perhaps from your past or your present, someone cruel or harsh who have said things to you in the past. Imagine they are there. I told you this wasn't pleasant. But then the other person, perhaps not what you expected, takes off their mask and it's you. Alongside the other person, both of them hitting you against the wall. And if you want, you can stay in this position if this really is where you want to stay. But there's just one more option, and it really is open to you. I want you to take courage and pull back. Pull back the camera lens of your eye. And let the camera move backwards and backwards and backwards. And you see suddenly the clay wall stop. You realize that there is no clay wall behind the camera. It's not boxed in that you thought. You start to see studio lights above you. And then as you go back and back further still, you start to see this weird red dungeon. This welcome to Videodrome experience starting to shrink into a square. And around that square, what do you see? An old school TV set. Yep. All it took was a very slight change in your perception, but now look where you are. You're in your lounge, watching a story on TV. Just a story, packed into a VHS tape, which has power for sure, but it's just a story. And you look to your shelf and you see all the other tapes that you could put on instead. And with that in mind, let's stop that tape. And as the white noise plays and you make the choice of what to play next, let's pray. God, some of us feel like we're trapped in self-criticism, chained to it, second nature to us. So could you do something with our perception? Would you help us to zoom out and help us to see the stories we've been told, the stories we've told ourselves? Let us see them as theater, as stories, as video drone, a movie, a film. And help us to perceive a new path in the wasteland, streams in the desert, and a way through the red clay to something else. Tell us a new story. Give us the patience to let this new story sink in. Amen. Well, as ever, we're now going to move on to some music, and I'm going to invite the band, and they're going to sing to us a song called Rusting and Unchanged, a song that's inspired by Videodrome, but also by Ray Bradbury. Thank you. Well, can you put your hands together for the band? Thank you. And by the way, if you like any of the music that you hear in Creepy Cove, don't forget that the albums are available. You just have to visit Bandcamp, search for Peter Laws, and you'll find them there. But for now, we have reached the end. Well, thank you for listening to this sermon-only edition of Creepy Cove Community Church Podcast. You can find more sermons, but also full services as well, if you wanted to check out creepycove.com. Remember, support the show by going to patreon.com/creepycove or visit creepycove.com and sign up to the Peter Laws newsletter so you can stay in the loop. Have a great week. Take care.